I had one class in law school that was kind of a general practice class. So I knew how to draft a simple will. I knew how to, you know, do some very simple, very uncontested divorce. Like, just very simple basic stuff that were taught in there. So I was like, all right, I got some of the basics down. Not luckily, but for me, there was a law school classmate of mine was going out on his own at the same time. But he intended to do that. That was his plan. Like, he's like, I'm going to graduate from law school and I'm going to start my own practice. So he was planning it. Like, we passed, you know, we took the bar exam. And while I was sitting here trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, he was getting stuff put together. So I hung out with him for a while, like figuring out, like, hey, he's, you know, trying to figure out practice management software and finding an office and all these things.
Welcome to the Founding Partner Podcast. Join your host, Jonathan Hawkins, as we explore the fascinating stories of successful law firm founders. We'll uncover their beginnings, triumph over challenges, and practice growth. Whether you aspire to launch your own firm, have an entrepreneurial spirit, or are just curious about the legal business, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
All right. Welcome to Founding Partner Podcast. I'm Jonathan Hawkins. Excited about our guest today. We've got some cool stuff to talk about. We've got Bradley Miller. I think you go by Brad.
But I do.
Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about you and your law firm?
So my name is Brad Miller. I am a solo lawyer, true solo, me, myself, and I. And my practice is focused on working with small businesses, helping buy and sell the businesses, so owners of those businesses and people looking to buy them. And then I also work with franchisees, so people looking to buy into a franchise. And I've been doing those things for about 10 years. I'm located here in Ohio, so the middle of Ohio.
And in terms of the businesses that are getting bought and sold, is it all types, or do you have a specific industry or industries you sort of focus on?
Primarily, they're smaller businesses. So people who are actually running the businesses themselves, those are the ones who I help them sell businesses or people buying it to get into it. So
I think you said you've been doing this about 10 years and you're solo. Is it just, do you have any help, any VAs,
it is
anybody?
Me, myself, and I do it all.
Nice. Yeah. I've been there. So you started your firm maybe 10 years ago. I believe you started it straight out of law school. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I've been doing this kind of line of work for about 10 years, but I actually started my practice back in 2007. And I did. I started right out of law school on my own. That was never my intention because honestly, I never went to law school intending to be a lawyer.
Oh, wow. What did you want to do?
So I went to law school, you know, when I was in high school. I would watch all the lawyer TV shows that were on at that time. And the big one that I remember was The Practice with Dilip McDermott. I never wanted to be Dilip McDermott. I didn't want to be any other lawyers on his team. I wanted to be the judge. I thought that was a really cool role. I didn't want to be arguing and all that stuff and all the drama. I wanted to be the one here administering justice and kind of up there and maintaining stuff. So I'm like, that's what I want to do, right? I want to be a judge. And so that's why I went to law school, because I know, hey, to be a judge, you got to be a lawyer first. So I went to law school thinking, hey, got to be a lawyer first, got to do that for a little bit, and then I'll be a judge. So that was kind of my impetus for law school.
And then, so you started straight out of law school. I know others that have done it. That had to be a pretty scary proposition. What was sort of going through your mind as you...
Yeah,
ventured out and did that?
Well, I like to tell people that I was kind of a reluctant solo because I didn't ever intend to be a solo. Again, I really never intended to be I didn't really want to practice law. That's not really why I went to law school in the first place. And so when I was faced with coming out of law school and didn't have a job, couldn't find a job at that point. And so I'm like, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, was like, we've got bills, we need to pay. Right? You know, student loans are coming due. You got to figure something out. You can't just sit here waiting for the phone to ring by somebody to offer you a job. You need to do something to make some money. So it was either waiting tables or start my own practice. So I figured, you know, what the heck? Let's put this law license to use and see what we can come up with. So I jumped in, knowing absolutely no idea what I was doing.
Yeah. How did you figure it out? Did you have mentors? Did you...
I had one class in law school that was kind of a general practice class. So I knew how to draft a simple will. I knew how to, you know, do some very simple, very uncontested divorce, like just very simple, basic stuff that I were taught in there. So I was like, all right, I got some of the basics down. Not luckily, but for me, there was a law school classmate of mine has would going on out on his own at the same time. But he intended to do that. That was his plan. Like, he's like, I'm going to graduate law school and I'm going to start my own practice. So he was planning it. Like, we passed, you know, we took the bar exam. And while I was sitting here trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, he was getting stuff put together. So I hung out with him for a while, like figuring out like, hey, he's, you know, trying to figure out practice management software and finding an office and all these things. So I started hanging out with him. And so kind of picked up on what he was doing so that when I started my practice, I pretty much just copied what he did and called it my own. Because if it worked for him, hey, you know, I figure it worked for me too, right?
Yeah. So did you guys share an office or was it sort of the informal following him?
Yeah, there was an office across the hall. So it was in a large building and he had a little office and right across the hall was another office that was open. So I took that one and we did that. I did that for, I don't know, a little over a year or so like that before I actually did join with him and another lawyer in a 3-person firm for a little bit. But otherwise, it was just me doing my own thing for a while.
So let's talk. There's a few things I want to explore here. But so you ended up joining them and you were in a firm with some folks and obviously you're not anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you want to dive into that, but obviously you decided to go a different direction. What happened there?
So the three of us had different practice areas. One of my law school classmate there, his practice area was domestic. He loved domestic work and he also did some criminal defense. My other law partner was 100% immigration law. So she had hundreds of clients at one time and was traveling back and forth to immigration court and dealing with that all the time. And then there was me who kind of took whatever walked in the door. And a lot of that was kind of little civil stuff. I did some juvenile defense work, some criminal defense work, but just kind of whatever kind of stuff that I could come up with. But we all had different practice areas. And that also meant we had different money-making models, I guess. I mean, the immigration was very, here's the set fee. You pay me $100 a month until it's paid off, right? So she's getting little chunks of money every month, but she had a lot of clients. So she made a decent amount every month coming in. My buddy doing domestic work would get a retainer that he'd bill against. He'd bid everything hourly. So he would say, hey, I'm doing a divorce. It's $15,000. So he would have a big chunk of cash he would get and would bill against it. So he kind of had constant cash flow from that. I was not so lucky. I did not have the constant cash flow like they did. And so it came down to all of us had distinct practice areas that didn't really work together as well. We each had different revenue coming in and different revenue needs and things like that at the same time. And we realized it was more of a force fit than anything else. And so kind of at about a year or so into it, we're like, you know what? It's probably not a long-term thing at this point. So let's kind of separate and go our separate ways at this point.
So it sounds like you guys, it was a pure one-third partnership. You were splitting everything three ways. And then because of the different cash flows, that's why it didn't really work.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, part of it, we tried to build in something so that you'd get at least a minimum every month, which was fine for like the domestic, for the immigration lawyer, because she had plenty. She was coming all the time, but I had some really lean months during that time. And so at times where I was getting more money than I brought in for the firm. And so like other people were bringing more money, you know, and so just, it didn't work out really well, just the way everything worked out. So.
So you guys ended up going your separate ways and you're back on your own. You said when you first started, you were doing all sorts of different stuff. It sounds like you were doing a lot of litigation related work. Do you do any of that anymore?
Nope.
Or are you done with that? Okay.
Nope.
So yeah. Okay.
If I'm in a courtroom for some reason, something's gone terribly wrong. Like,
so I guess you've given up on the judge thing.
I have.
You got to litigate for a while to be a judge, right?
Yeah. No, I watched judges like early on. I started practicing. I would see judges in the courtroom and see what they actually did. And I was like, this is not what they show on television at all. Like, this is not what I want to be doing. Like, especially dealing with like criminal dockets and sitting up there and like sentencing people and dealing with repeat offenders. Like, I want nothing to do with all that. So I'm like, nope, not for me.
Yeah. Okay. So you started out doing a lot of litigation. How did you get away from that? Take us through that evolution And was it conscious or did it just sort of happen? I'm curious about that.
So, like I said, I started out taking kind of whatever work came walking the doors, you know, all low level basic stuff, traffic offenses. I decided it's some juvenile appointed work. So that's pretty low level work. I would, again, somebody comes in the door with something, you know, it's probably low level stuff that I'll handle. But over time, I started to realize things that I didn't like doing. Like, I quickly realized after handling one domestic case that I had no interest in doing divorce work or anything family law. So I cut that out. And I started doing that with different things. Like, you know, I did a will and I'm like, it didn't really work for me. You know, and I started peeling away things like that and started seeing like, what are the things that I do like? You know, who do I like working with? Again, the juvenile work, it was very thankless, a very low paying work because it was all appointed stuff. And it was also very depressing seeing these 12, 13-year-old kids who were either, you know, a neglect situation where their parents weren't taking care of them properly, or they were committing crimes and they needed defense. You know, and that was just very depressing to me. And it's something I didn't really like the environment was with there. And I started realizing I didn't like criminal law because the clients didn't appreciate what I did. I could get them the best outcome in the world for what happened. And they'd still be upset, you know, well, why didn't you get this charges dismissed against me? Well, because you did it. Like, you confessed, they caught you on camera. There were eyewitnesses. The getaway driver said that you did it. Like, all these things happened. You did it. So that's why I could not get everything dismissed against you. We got you pled down. Like, you should be happy. Like, you're not spending time in prison. Like, but they just didn't really appreciate the work that I did. And I'm like, it's a thankless job. I don't really have interest in it. And the last thing I didn't like to do for realize was I didn't like dealing with insurance companies. I did a couple cases where insurance companies were on the other side and it was miserable because the people were not dealing with their own money. So they didn't really care. Like I'm like, this is not something I want to deal with. So I just slowly peeled by the things that I didn't like doing and figured out what I did like doing. And I realized that I liked working with business owners. It started with some small business, you know, entrepreneur startup stuff. Hey, can you set up an LLC for me? You know, primarily things like that. And I realized, hey, you know, I like this work is a lot less stressful. You know, it doesn't have to require me getting up and going to court. And the business owners tend to appreciate what I did more. You know, they say, hey, this is an investment. This is, you know, I appreciate you helping me like an accountant or something like that would be. And so I started going towards those kind of clients and that kind of work.
So I like that. I'm a big believer in niche practice areas. I talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. And you sort of did both things. One is you move towards, and it's not a, hey, I know what I'm going to do and I'm there. It's an incremental move towards the things you like. But then the flip side is you're also running away or shedding or turning away the things you don't like. And then eventually you do that long enough, little by little, eventually you end up in a place that hopefully is right for you. You know, I guess there are some attorneys out there, and we'll get to some of this in a minute, that, you know, if it's all about the money, they may be stuck in a practice area they really hate, but they're just making too much money in their mind and they're scared to start over. So there is a trap you can get into, but luckily you didn't. So let's talk about how you bill clients. You're pretty active on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. You post a lot about this, and I really want to dive into this because you've got an interesting perspective and I want to know, you know, we'll dive into this. So how do you bill your clients now?
Yeah.
And maybe how has that changed over time?
So when I started practicing, the only thing that I knew was hourly billing. Like, that's what the guy across the hall did. You know, he was domestic lawyer, family law, so divorces. He did it all on hourly stuff. That's all I knew. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to do hourly. And I based my rate off of what he based his off of. He said his rate was, I don't know, $175 an hour or something. All right, cool. I'll make mine $150 an hour or something. I mean, that's all it really was to it when I came up to setting up my rate when I started. And so the first stuff I did, it was all hour like that. I would track my time and I bill that way. When I did appointed work, I did the juvenile appointed work and some criminal appointed. That's all hourly stuff. Like, you get to track your time and you submit it and they pay you based on the time that you spend on it. And so I did that for a little bit, but realized, A, I was terrible at it. I mean, that's the big thing. I was just awful at keeping track of my time because I would go from one thing to the next and I'd forget to stop the clock and it would still be running like an hour later. And I was like, shit, I switched to something else. Like, how long, when did I stop? How long was it? You know, like my mind tends to jump to different things. And so I don't always think to stop it when I'm going from one task to the next or even one client to the next. Like the phone rings and I pick it up. Like I didn't think to stop it. Like it didn't make sense to me that way. And so really that was kind of got me to start looking at other options. And honestly, it's been 15 years since I, you know, almost since I started doing flat fee based stuff. So I don't even remember how I got into it and what was the first kind of cases. But I know when I started doing business work, that was all done on flat fees. So when I started setting up new LLCs for clients and things, that was all done on a flat fee. And I think I realized the clients really enjoyed that. They appreciate that. They like knowing, hey, here's the fee up front. There's no questions or concerns of what it's going to be. Am I going to be paying X amount down the road? Like, what is it? Like, they know, hey, it's $500, $1,000, whatever it is, they know up front before the work started. They can plan for it. And I didn't have to worry about tracking time. I didn't have to worry about putting money in trust and billing against it and all that nonsense. Like, I could just say, here's the fee, you know, and then I'd send them out the invoice. Early on, I sent it out at the end when things were done. And so that's kind of how things started. And eventually, I started thinking, how can I figure out pricing better? Because I knew I was terrible at pricing when I started flat fees. I knew I was undercharging. Like, I would have some terribly slow months, and I'd be charging, you know, $400 for doing something, $500 for doing something, you know, and I'd be spending hours working on it. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm spending a lot of time. I need to figure out how to build this stuff properly, how to price it. And so I started, and I don't remember exactly how I got into it. I found out about it, but started getting into value-based pricing. And that really was the beginning for me of just how to come up with prices, how to be more fair when it comes to pricing for clients and the work that I do. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
Okay. So yeah, we're going to dive into that. So currently you don't do any hourly work. It's all fixed fee.
Correct.
Okay. And so, you know, you call it value-based pricing or value-based billing, however you want to call it. So, you know, how do you define that? How do you, Brad, define that?
So value-based pricing is simply pricing the client based on the value that they're receiving from your services. So looking at the impact of what I do on them, on their lives, on their business, whatever it may be, and coming up with a fair price for that.
You know, a lot of lawyers out there, they've heard, you know, fixed fee, this, that, and the other. I do some of that. I do a blend. You know, some folks, I guess most lawyers that have been on hourly, their first sort of experiment into this, they say, all right, how many hours do I think this is going to take me? They do some sort of conversion, and that's how they come up with the price. Maybe that's how you started. Why don't you tell us how you did it in the beginning and maybe how you approach it now? And how do you break free the people that have that hourly mentality? How do you break free? What can lawyers do to break free?
I will say that it is very difficult. The longer that you've been doing hourly billing, the harder it is because it starts getting ingrained in you. Like, you start thinking of everything of how long did that take me? I know lawyers who have done it for 15, 20 years and then tried to switch and they couldn't get their brain to stop thinking of hourly stuff. You know, they'd be all away from their desk on vacation or whatnot, and they'd be thinking, ooh, this is 0.5. Like, they're thinking all the time and things of time and how long they're spending their time. And I don't remember when I started doing value-based pricing. I don't remember, because this has been 12 to 15 years ago now. I probably looked a little bit about what I would have charged if I did hourly, but I know I was still undercharging it. Because I was trying to think what would be fair to the client. You know, what would be fair to them for this work that I'm doing? And so that was, well, not maybe the exact right question. I think it kind of got me headed in the right way. Because I was starting to think about the price in terms of the client and not about me and the work that I did. And that's really the big difference, is that value-based pricing looks at the client. So we're looking at the value of what I'm doing, whatever it is, what is that value to the client? What's the impact on them? The work that I do is irrelevant. The motions, the contracts, the conversations, the phone calls, all that kind of stuff is irrelevant to the price. It doesn't matter if I take 10 hours to do something or if I take 2 hours to do something. All that matters is that impact, that value, that result to the client. And so that's the hardest thing for lawyers to do, is to switch from that, I've worked X amount of time, so I need to be able to, you know, get reimbursed for that amount of time. Going from that mindset to, I don't matter at all. I'm merely a tool. You know, the work that I do is merely a tool to create this value for the client. What is the value of that client? And what a proportion of that value can I get for myself? You know?
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, for example, some of the things I do, I mean, I have spent thousands and thousands of hours learning some of the things I do, and just some of that experience and research and just all of it. And I might be able to come in and do something in, you know, 30 minutes, where someone who does not have all of that, it might take them 100 hours to get sort of where I, you know, close to where I am on this distinct, you know, this discrete issue, you know. And if you're doing it hourly, you don't capture that value at all.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that jumped out at me. It was like, I'm getting better at what I'm doing. I'm learning more. I'm getting more experience. I'm doing it faster and I'm doing it better. But yet I'm actually charging less under an hourly billing model because it's taking me less time to do. And that did make sense
to
me.
And the other, yeah. And the other piece, you know, there, let's say you do 10 tasks to deliver something to a client. Some of those tasks are going to be, you know, if you did an hourly, whatever, are just going to be, there's going to be more value in that certain, you know, task number 9 versus number 3. And if you do an hourly, you're sort of charging the same for every single task, even though if you really dug down deep, the value being delivered for that, you know, subset or sub number of the task is just not valuable at all, really.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you do an hourly, you know, you are organizing the file. You're charging the exact same price for every minute you organize the file, just the same as you would time that you were sitting in front of the client, having a one-on-one conversation, explaining the situation or providing them with an answer, you know, diagnosing what's going on. Like, those are two very different things when it comes to the value they provide to the client, but yet you're billing them exactly the same. Again, it didn't make sense to me.
At the law firm GC, our team of experienced attorneys provides knowledgeable legal counsel for businesses of all sizes. Founded by Jonathan Hawkins, our firm specializes in corporate law, real estate, litigation, and more. To learn how we can become your trusted legal advisors, visit www.yourlawfirmgc.com and schedule a free consultation today. The Law Firm GC. Law done right.
So how do you deal with scope creep? So you've defined the scope. This is going to be the price. I don't think clients do it on purpose. Maybe some do, but they always ask for that one other thing. How do you deal with that when you're doing your value pricing?
That was an issue early on, especially when I worked with entrepreneurs, because we'd say, hey, I'll set up your LLC for you or whatever it might be. And then something else came up like, hey, can you do this? Or I have a question about this. And so it was very easy just to say, oh, okay, well, yeah, here's this real quick. You know, it takes me 5 minutes to do. But then there was another 5 minute something. And then there was a 20-minute thing after that. Or I had to look up to do some research on a question. And that was another hour and a half over here that I was doing. And I wasn't charging for any of it because I gave them a set fee for starting up their business, right? And so that was something I definitely struggled with. And part of what's helped me is the fact that the work that I do now pretty much covers anything that comes up. So if I'm representing you in the sale of your business, from the moment you gauge me until the deal's done, pretty much anything that comes up there that's regarding the deal, I'm going to handle for you. That's built into the price, you know? And so part of it is I know I've been doing this enough now. I've experienced enough in it. I know what kind of things might come up. I know what to expect. Well, I know that there's always going to be surprises pop up. You know, I know that they are likely to happen in these type of areas. And so I've gone through it enough to know and feel comfortable that I can say, here's what it's likely to look like. It could look like this. It could also look shorter than this, but it's likely to look like this. And so based on that, this is what would be a fair price. This would be a fair, you know, for all that stuff, knowing that things might vary a little bit here and there, but by and large, it's going to be a wash at the end. So some of it's a factor of the fact, just what I do, which helps.
And it sounds like you've not been afraid to experiment, and obviously you've lost on some, and each time you try it, you get a little bit better probably for the next one.
Exactly. And that's, and you can't be afraid. I mean, a lot of lawyers are afraid to just try something like this because they're like, well, what if I lose money on this, right? What if it's not profitable? Well, not everything that you do is going to be profitable. Not everything you're going to make a lot of money on. Some matters you're going to make a lot of money on, you know, because maybe you say, hey, I'm going to bill you for this, where this thing's going to take 10 hours to do. 2 hours later, you've done it. You've got the solution. You know, so that's kind of a windfall when you think of it that way. And then you've got the ones that are going to take you 12 hours and you plan for 10. But at the end of the day, it's going to even out. And the better you get at it, the more you can plan for some of those ups and downs, the easier it is to say it's all built in. It's all part of it. And I know that, you know what, win or lose, at the end of the day, we're all still going to win.
Yeah. You know, for me, I've done a good amount of flat fee work and I still do. And my attitude was, you know, I may lose money on this deal, but I'm going to gain knowledge and experience for the next one. And part of it is, you just got to try it. You just got to try it. And until you try it, I mean, you're gonna mess up. That's sort of my attitude. Yeah. And I think that's probably the way it is. It reminds me of, you know, my memory, at least, when Amazon launched Prime a long time ago. I remember hearing, you know, they just picked a price. They didn't know. They just picked a number. And part of it was, they figured they would figure it out on the back end.
Everybody does. Done it a while. I mean, that's what everybody does. You know, any most products out there, there's no, you know, what's the value of an iPhone, right? I mean, Apple didn't say, well, let's calculate, you know, all this stuff and let's, like, they know what it costs them to build it, right? So they cover their costs for it. And then they're like, what do we think people are going to pay for it? And they threw something out there and maybe they threw it out to a test, some test groups or something. But ultimately, they just kind of threw it out there and said, what price, you know, would you pay X amount for this phone? And at some point, they said, well, this seems to be the optimum price right now for this phone. And that's what they went with. And then they tweaked it and all the stuff.
So at some point, you decided you're going to go down, you fell down this rabbit hole in the value billing. Mm-hmm. You know, where did you learn it? If I'm an attorney out there and I'm thinking, hey, I want to try this, do you have some resources? Where would they go to really try to learn this?
Yeah.
Or maybe get some of the theory behind it or whatever.
So the godfather of value-based billing, value-based pricing, and there's a difference because pricing is done up front, billing is done in arrears after work's done. Value-based pricing, the godfather is Ron Baker. Ron is an accountant, and he wrote kind of the Bible on value-based pricing and how to implement it into a professional services firm, law firm, accounting firm, you know, any kind of a professional firm like that. So that's definitely a great resource. It goes through why you a lot of reasons why you should do value-based pricing versus hourly billing, and then goes into a lot of theory behind it all in his book. Another good person to follow is a fellow Jonathan Stark. He wrote a book, Hourly Pricing is Nuts, I think it's called, and he is a software developer. And talks about, you know, why hourly billing and from a software standpoint doesn't make sense, and why it makes a lot more sense to do it, you know, based on value. And even though it's not a law firm, there's still a lot you can take from his book that you can apply to law firms. And his is a little more practical based, a little bit more reachable, I think, for people. But if you really want to get down the rabbit hole, Ron Baker is a great place to go to check some stuff out there. So those were the two first kind of things I looked at when I started.
So Ron Baker, fairly recently, didn't he come out with a new book about subscription-based pricing?
Yep.
Do you do any subscription-type pricing? Have you explored that?
I don't. I looked into it when I was doing startup work. The problem I ran into was that I had a hard time explaining or maybe having clients understand the value that I was providing. Why would they be paying me X amount of dollars every month? Like, what were they getting for that? And when they asked that question, I couldn't really answer. Like, I was like, that's a really good question. You're a brand new business. You literally have no legal issues at this, you know, day one. Like, we get you set up. You don't have anything right now. Like, your money is better spent probably on, you know, product development or getting your services up or marketing. really than it is, you know, to pay me, you know, every month. So I couldn't find reasons for it. I had a hard time explaining it to clients and they didn't really see reasons for it. I think it has a place. It can make sense in certain circumstances, practice areas, but I've never been able to implement it myself successfully.
Yeah, that's been my experience. I've explored it. I think in certain practice areas, I think even in mine, I think there's probably a place for it, but it's just finding the value proposition and having the clients realize that, because I mean, that's part of it. They got to feel like they're getting value, back to the value pricing. They got to feel like they're getting value. And if they don't, then they're not going to buy it, right?
Right. And it's not fair. Yeah. And it's not fair to them if they're just throwing you cash and they're getting nothing for it.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the running of your law firm. It's all you. So you got to do everything. You got to do marketing, the service delivery, the admin. How do you balance your time between all the things you got to do running the law firm?
So it's taken a while to kind of get my practice down to kind of where it is today. I'm to the point though right now where the overhead stuff, the admin sort of side of it, is very minimal. I started out early on when I was in law school, when I clerked at a law firm, everything they had was still paper-based. So they had the big file cabinets and they had paper files. When I started my practice, I had paper files too, but I also started getting more digital stuff. So I got a printer, a multifunction printer that could scan. And so whenever someone would come in, I would scan it. And so this, you know, this was, law firms were just kind of starting to think about doing this stuff. I was getting stuff in right away. And because of that, and the fact that I've always tried to implement some technology in place, I've always had practice management software in place and things, it's allowed me to keep the time required a lot lower because I don't have to worry about going through papers. I don't have to do all that stuff. It's all on my computer. I can type in, pull something up, send an invoice out, you know, do things like that.
Well, I'll tell
you,
the invoicing is a lot easier if you're not having to track and input your time and review bills. Yeah. If you just have a one line invoice, it's a lot easier there, right? It saves you a lot of time.
That is very true. Yeah. That was one of the things when I was hourly billing, I'd have to track it and then it'd have to be all out there and I have to check through it. And yeah, not anymore.
Yeah. So switching gears again, I know you have a side gig or a side hustle coaching gig. Tell us about that. Is it, what's it called? New Modern Lawyer?
New Modern Lawyer is kind of where I talk about all this other stuff about lawyer life. You know, I talk about the hourly, the pricing, you know, how you practice your, price your services. And we talk a lot about value-based pricing in there, but really it kind of encompasses the whole practice for sole and small firm lawyers. When I started out way back when, one of the first things that I went to do was to find other lawyers that were in similar situations. Like, you know, I just started out my own practice. I want to meet and talk with other solo small firm lawyers. So I reached out to the local bar association and said, hey, do you guys have a solo small firm committee or group or something like that that I can be a part of? Like, I want to meet these people or whatever. And the person I reached out to says, you know, it's kind of ironic that you reached out because we're actually looking to get that group back going again after being dormant for a while. And we're actually needing someone to chair that. Would you be interested? So here I am, like, you know, a first year, pretty much lawyer, new lawyer coming out and wanted acting to chair a bar association committee of solo and small firm lawyers. But ever since then, and having to learn how to practice, how to learn how to be a lawyer, you know, because I never had a firm to learn all these things from. I never had other lawyers to really learn how to run a business. I have tried to help other lawyers have an easier go at it than I did. Like, I know that I've struggled a lot to be a lawyer, to get to where I am today. And so my hope is to help other lawyers so they don't have to struggle as much, to share some of the things that I have learned along the way, my experiences, my insights, so that they have it easier. You know, there are a lot more resources nowadays for them than there was when I started, but you know, just to be able to kind of put things together and to be talk about not only what's out there, but how do we move things forward? you know, because that's...
Yeah, I do feel like, sorry to cut you off, but I do feel like, you know, back then when you started, there wasn't a whole lot out compared with what's out there today. But even with all that's out there today, it's hard to know what to do. And it's pretty lonely for those starting a firm. You don't know exactly, there's a lot of information, but you don't know where to go. You don't know what's good, what's bad, or even where to start.
Right.
And, you know, bar associations, I think they try, but maybe they're not as effective as folks out there like you and others that can sort of coach and help folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because bar associations are dealing with a lot of external things going on right now. You know, pandemic especially, you know, really put a crimp in a lot of their stuff now. And so, like, one of the things that I've been doing now for the last 12 or 13 years is actually putting a program together for the Bar Association to help people looking to get their solo small firm practices off the ground, because otherwise there's no one doing it. Like you said, there are more resources, but they're still disparate out there. There's still a lot of voice and noise out there. Like, who do I listen to? What do I go for? And a lot of it is still kind of outdated. You know, a lot of it is based off of things that may be relevant 5, 10 years, 15 years ago, but are not taking consideration the changes in the law practice today.
Yeah. So you also have a podcast. Is it the New Modern Lawyer Podcast? Is that what it's called?
So there is a podcast, New Modern Lawyer Podcast. I've got about 50 episodes out on that one. I'm not actively, it's kind of in hiatus right now, but definitely there's topics out there to listen to, and hopefully there's some good information. I think it's good information out there for people.
Yeah, there's one I want to dive on. There's one that I came across, and it was about success mm-hmm. with your law firm. And, you know, most people, when they think about success, they think about money, you know, or how many lawyers you have or whatever. How do you define success with a law firm?
So those are all external things. Number of employees, number of attorneys, number of clients, money that come in the door. Those are all external stuff. For me, success is an internal thing. So it's personal to everybody. Like, what I define as success is going to be different than what you find as success in your practice. So for me is, if I can make a difference in one person's life in a day, then I'm successful. Like, that's my goal, is to just improve one person's life in whatever way, shape, or form that may be. It could be very small. It could be something huge. But if I can do that, then I am successful. And everything else is just gravy.
Yeah, that's a great approach, great attitude. So shifting a little bit. So you went to law school because you want to be a judge. Obviously, you're not a judge. You didn't plan on starting your firm. You're doing it. You're doing a good job. So if you were not practicing law, what do you think you'd be doing?
I would definitely be working it with lawyers. I would definitely be going full-time kind of into coaching and helping lawyers with their practices. There is definitely a need for it. And helping lawyers is really what I get passionate about. Like, you know, I enjoy helping clients through the law practice, but at the end of the day, if I had to pick one or the other, if, you know, you can either help lawyers or you can help your clients in the law firm, I'd pick helping the lawyers every day of the week. Like, that's what I enjoy doing. That's where I really can get going, helping people like that.
Okay, so I'm a young lawyer, or maybe an older lawyer, who's thinking about starting a firm, or maybe I've just open the doors. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice that you would give to them in the early days?
I mean,
to set themselves up for thriving practice?
All sort of advice that you could give. But I would say a couple things would be, first of all, take things slow, but also keep them simple. I think, well, a lot of times we try, especially as lawyers, we like complexity. We like a lot of moving pieces. We like a lot of things. We like all the details. And that's not very helpful when it comes to starting your practice. It's a lot better, I think, to start simple, start basic. You know, what are the minimum things that you really need to get going, and then build from there, right? Which kind of leads into the second point, which is be intentional about what you want. I know when I started, again, because I didn't really intend to be a lawyer or start my own practice, I just kind of jumped in with both feet and kind of took where it went, right? Like, my very first client was actually a law school buddy of mine. His sister got a DUI. So I represented her. That was my very first client. My second client was a law school classmate. His wedding venue canceled on him a couple months before their wedding. And so I helped him to try to get his deposit back for the venue. Like, those are my two first clients, and things that just kind of came to me, but not really stuff that I was ever looking for or I planned on doing either of those areas, and eventually decided I didn't have any interest in either of those things. But it's really, if I had to go back and make some different choices, I would be a lot more intentional about how I design my practice. I would start by thinking about, who are the clients that I really like working with? Who are the people I like working with? What are the kind of things I like to do? You know, do I like being in front of a judge, being in court and arguing? Do I like the stress, you know, the excitement, the adrenaline rush that you'd get, you know, in doing court and litigation work? Or would I much rather do something a lot more low key? You know, so I think about how I like to work. Do I like to work alone? Like, I've worked basically from a home office for, you know, more than 10 years now. I don't need a office to work that I do, because I don't really most of the time meet with clients. Or if I do, it was always at restaurants or, you know, places like that. And so how do I want to work my practice? Do I want to have an office? Do I want to work from home? Those are things to think about and to consider. And then, what are your values? What's most important to you? And this is something that I don't think that enough people think about, especially early on, is what is really important. Like, for me, my most important values are my personal and spiritual growth, my family, and serving others. And so everything that I do goes or revolves around those three things. And so when I design my law practice, I want to make sure that I don't do something or make a decision that's going to impact any of those negatively. You know, it's very important. You know, family is important to me. It's important that I'm here to get my daughter on and off the school bus every day. If I was working in an office for a firm, I probably couldn't do that. I mean, you know, I'd be stuck in an office till at least 5-6 o'clock every night, probably. She gets off the bus, you know, 4-4:30. I wouldn't be here for that. You know, she gets on the bus at 8 o'clock. I would probably be at the office already by then, or I wouldn't be able to do both or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to coach her teams. Like, I coach her softball team. It'd be hard to do that if I was working till 10 o'clock at night at the office, you know, 2-3 nights a week. You know, if I had litigation deadlines that I had to meet. And so it's thinking about what I want my life to look like, what's important to me. And so designing my law practice around that versus the other way around, which is what most lawyers do, is say, here's my law practice, and then my life kind of has to fit that mold. And to me, yeah, that's a way that just leads to unhappiness, to burnout, to all those negative things we talk about that lawyers face.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's huge, and it's very important. It, you know, vision, you know, mm-hmm, being intentional, knowing what you want, where you want to go, and then having your values and using that as, you know, having the vision as your North Star, your guiding light, and then the values as the filter along the way of what to push aside and what to let in.
Exactly.
So real quick. So, you know, people that start in the firm, sort of like you when you started yours, you know, that sounds great, and I'm 100% in that camp, but you got to pay the bills too. So how do you balance having to pay the bills with, hey, no, I want to go over here? So you get that juvenile case and you're like, I just don't want to deal with this, but you need the money. So how would you approach that?
Yeah. So I would say have two, maybe, avenues. So I say, start developing your firm, start designing the firm about what you want. Like, here's what I want it to look like. Here's the life that I want and what that needs to do. But you might need to take some other things in the meantime. You may need to take the juvenile appointed work or the criminal appointed work to get some cash flow going in so you could build up things. You may need to take some of the lower value kind of cases that's not really what you want to be focusing on ultimately, but it's a stepping stone. And realizing that, hey, this is merely a stepping stone to what I want. This is helping get things going. It's helping bring in cash in. You know, it's getting me to where I want to be. You know, you can't, it can be really hard starting out to jump from point to point B when you're down here. And so you got to take the steps up to get there. And sometimes that means doing some of the stuff that's maybe not ideally what you want to be doing, but it's okay doing. You know, I don't mind doing a startup here now and then, let's say. You know, so I'll take some of those clients maybe, or, you know, some contract reviews or something. Like, yeah, it's not maybe exactly what I want to be doing, but it's heading that direction and it's helping me develop relationships with contacts that might need that work, you know, the work that I want to do later on. It's introducing me to referral sources potentially in the world. And so always trying to see, you know, what do I need to do to get there. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, obviously you got to pay your bills. You know, and so I will never, you know, put anyone down for doing something because they have to, you know, because it's either I take this and do this work or I don't pay my mortgage. Like that's.
Yeah. And to your point, everything you do, you can learn from and it adds to everything else. So, yeah, yep. I'm with you on that.
Everything's learning experience. So, yeah.
So we've been going a while. So I want to thank you for joining us, Brad. If anybody wants to find you to maybe, you know, ask your thoughts on, you know, value-based pricing or anything like that, how can they find you?
Yeah. So as you mentioned earlier, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So that's the easiest probably place to find me, learning all about value-based pricing and, you know, being a lawyer dad and, you know, we throw some marketing stuff in there and I'll kind of, whatever really comes to mind, I'll throw out there, you know, who knows what it might be coming out there. So anything regarding the practice of law, especially for, you know, solo small firm lawyers, I'll talk about it there on LinkedIn. So that's the easy place to find me. My law firm website is bradleymillerlaw.com. So you can also find me there specifically about the law stuff. And then newmodernlawyer.com is kind of the coaching / you know, whatever you want to call it, side of things. And so there's some information there as well if somebody's interested in learning more or maybe having me help them with their practices.
Awesome. Well, Brad, I appreciate you coming on, and people out there that are on LinkedIn, definitely go follow Brad and, you know, get into some debates on the value price, value-based pricing. Fine. Tell him how it can't be done. I know that can bring out some of the trolls because I've seen it. Mm. But again, thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Founding Partner Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. You can also connect with Jonathan on LinkedIn and check out the show notes with links to resources mentioned throughout our discussion by visiting www.yourlawfirmgc.com. We'll see you next time for more origin stories and insights from successful law firm founders.